Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:37 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is January 20th. Silver was up another 32 cents today. And as I was pointing out last week, that Dogecoin still has, even today, a greater market cap than silver does. And I think that is one of the big logical inconsistencies that we have in the market, that something that started off as a joke can have more of or can have a greater value than all of the futures traded on the NYMEX exchange for silver, which is really rather extraordinary. But it really does help to highlight just how low prices are and how disinterested investors have been in precious metals over the course of the last 17 months. But silver continues to look like a first step above the base. And I think that that's one of the more important points, that we had this very lengthy period of consolidation, and we had a failed downside break in 2020, and then the breakout very soon afterwards, and the price has really been consolidating since then. But precious metals tend to do best when central banks can't do what they're supposed to do. And the market has priced in the potential that the Federal Reserve will raise rates more than four times this year. They're not quite at the assumption that they'll raise rates five times, but at least the belief is more than four times. And gold prices were a little softer in here today, but there's certainly a rounding characteristic evident over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. So I think that continues to be encouraging, and the price is still shy of the $1,850 area, but at least it's steadying from the 1,800 area. And we can also see there that the 200-day moving average has been going completely sideways. So that's a reflection that on average prices have pretty much gone nowhere for a year. And that kind of condition isn't going to last indefinitely. And then we have copper. Well, copper prices were up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today and continuing to firm from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this has looked like a consolidation in the region of the all-time peak for most of the last 9 months as well. So we're still in this congestion area for the major commodities. And then there are other commodities that are breaking on the upside, and nickel is one of those. So nickel prices continue to push on to new recovery highs, and was up again in a dynamic manner in here this week, or in here today. So this is now approaching the peak from back in 2014, and it represents the end of this very lengthy period of consolidation. But the big change is that the Chinese production of pig nickel is being curtailed by high energy prices and also by the lockdown on polluting activities ahead of the Winter Olympics. And the Winter Olympics starts in 2 weeks' time. And then, of course, we also have Chinese New Year on February 1st, and the PBOC wants to get out a message, or at least a clear message, that they don't want the property sector to collapse. So when we think about some of the most under pressure of the privately held property companies, we have to also remember that this decline was engineered. And they wanted to squeeze liquidity out of the market, and they've done so. Property prices are falling. Private property companies are defaulting on their debt. But Guangzhou R&F Properties was up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. Now, we're coming off of exceptionally depressed levels, and there is absolutely no doubt that we've had some acceleration on the downside. So the PBOC is beginning to give soothing sounds. They don't want a collapse in the property market. They simply want to squeeze leverage out of the system, and to a greater or lesser extent, they can begin to say that has been achieved. And we're starting to see that bullish intent is coming back into the tech sector. So Tencent was up in a dynamic manner in here today, and it's been forming a base for most of the last 6 months. And Alibaba continues to also demonstrate at least near-term support around the $100 area, and it's down in a really significant manner over the course of the last 12 months as well. Meituan has also begun to steady, and that's another one of those social media platforms, and it's down in a significant manner from the peak in early 2021 as well. So there's the realistic possibility that as we approach the new year and the outlook for liquidity in China improving, that commodities can do well, and also that the Chinese technology sector and broader stock market can also do well. So the Hang Seng is also rallying. And one of the, I think, more important points that won't be lost on investors is that the Hang Seng is a cheap index. It's trading on a forward PE of 8, and it has a dividend yield of about 2.3%, so almost 2.4%. So there's a lot of bad news has already been priced in, and if liquidity starts to improve, well, then there's the potential that it might at least go from the lower side of this range back up towards the upper side of the range. And then when we think about the H share index, which is the mainland companies listed in Hong Kong, well, then it's coming off of the lower side of what feels like an awfully long range. That it's been bobbing around here at the lower side of this range for the last 12 years. And now we're just starting to see it bouncing again. So if it gets up to the upper side of the range, well, it's not quite a double, but it's not far off a double either. And of course, that would be predicated on China being much more accommodative with liquidity, and certainly not cutting interest rates, or excuse me, not raising rates, then the big question, of course, is how much money are they going to print? Because the renminbi remains quite firm. But is the renminbi firm because of foreign demand? Because Wall Street is still richly valued. And you've got people like Jeremy Grantham talking about the potential that this is the top, and that the market could pull back by the S&P 500 could pull back by 50%, and the NASDAQ could pull back by even more. Well, the NASDAQ is certainly in negative territory in here today, and it's right in the region of the 200-day moving average. And it's worth also highlighting that the better performers in here were the Chinese listed shares, and that some of the really big high flyers from earlier on in the recovery from the pandemic are now suffering. And Peloton is certainly one of those, because they're killing people, or at least they're killing children with those machines. And what I find particularly interesting is that the company is still valued at nearly $8 billion, and they employ 6,700 people. There's the real possibility that the kinds of lawsuits that are going to pile up are going to have a really bad effect on this company, and most particularly as the pandemic ends and these expensive pieces of exercise equipment turn into expensive clothes horses. And then, of course, we have Amazon, which did fantastically well during the pandemic, but now it is breaking downwards, and it is looking like it's going to test the 3,000 level. Now, it really does have to bounce from this area. And, of course, the big question for these kinds of companies is going to be what happens in terms of interest rates and what happens in terms of corporate profits. There's the potential that bond yields could start to come back down. They're really over, bond prices are super oversold. So there's certainly the scope that we're going to start to see demand for bonds increase if the stock market correction starts to get somewhat deeper. I think that instead of thinking about it in terms of the top, it's more likely that we're in a medium-term correction. And the medium-term correction is, I think, that conclusion is driven by the fact that high yield spreads are still really quite well contained. And this is still a really rich financial environment. So there's financial conditions are still really very accommodative. And generally speaking, you don't see these kinds of, you don't see big tops emerge until we've been through a significant tightening cycle. And we're nowhere near that. So I suspect that this is much more like what we saw in late 2018. That we've seen the innovation portion of the market pulling back in a violent manner, and it's still weak. Now the bigger question is, what's going to happen in terms of interest rates? Because I really don't think they're going to raise rates by four times this year. I think it's more likely that they might even just only get one done, and at most two. And if that's the case, well then there's the potential that we're going to see a resumption of demand coming through. And I think it's also important to pay attention to what's happening with Bitcoin. The price continues to pause here around the 40,000 level, and it was up nearly $1,000 in here today. It's been a lead indicator for the wider market. So it peaked in November. Interestingly, the transportation index also peaked in November, and it's been easing back over the course of the last few months. Now, when we think about Dow theory, and I've had an interesting report sent through by a subscriber in here today talking about modern Dow theory. Well, one thing we know is that it's when both the transportation and the industrials are failing and then breaking downwards. Well, then that's generally considered a Dow sell signal. And when you look at the modern way of measuring Dow theory, they incorporate the S&P 500. And we've had the small pullbacks. We've had a pullback of about 3% and then a lower high as well, and another pullback of a rally of 3%. So those sorts of small measures are being completed. And the S&P 500 is still in the region of this 4,500 point level, and that's around the region of the previous peak. And it's also coinciding with the region of the 200-day moving average. So if this trend is going to remain consistent, we're going to see a bounce soon. If it fails and pulls back below the trend mean, well, then we're moving into a medium-term correction, which will be both deeper and lengthier in terms of how long it takes to recover from. And we've been through nearly 2 years of an exceptionally strong market, and corporate profits have been surging higher as well, and that's helped to justify valuations. So if corporate profits roll over and disappoint for the fourth quarter, well then that's going to contribute to weakness. But it will also move the needle in terms of what the Federal Reserve will do in terms of interest rates. One thing that I think is particularly relevant is that the Federal Reserve looks at the stock market as a barometer for how effective their policies have been. So they look at asset prices, and we've obviously had a significant recovery in housing prices. We've had a significant recovery in stock prices. So then they think that it's time to start removing some of the accommodation. If we start to see weakness coming through in those asset prices, well, then they're going to conclude that it might be a little too early. Now, I think one thing that nobody seems to be willing to talk about is that Japan hasn't been able to raise interest rates in years. Europe hasn't been able to raise interest rates since 2014 or 15, and they've been on zero since 2016. So now the question is, what's it going to take for the Federal Reserve to get off the zero bound? And are we going to be in a situation like Europe had in 2014, where they raised rates twice and then had to reverse course entirely? And then we also know that running off of the balance sheet, whether that was when Europe took $1 trillion out of circulation, it contributed to deflation. When the Federal Reserve took about $400 to $500 billion out of circulation during its quantitative tightening program, it set up the market for the potential for a significant decline in late 2019. And we had an inverted yield curve then as well. So the clock was ticking on a recession. And then they were already cutting interest rates by the time we got into 2020. And then they accelerated that program because of the pandemic. Well, now the debt load is higher, the valuations are higher, and the sensitivity of the market to interest rates is more acute. And if investors believe that the Fed would really raise rates by 4%, well, then they're obviously starting to take profits now. But I really don't believe that that is a realistic possibility. But it is likely that we could see a deeper pullback. We've seen plenty of those. And over the course of this bull market, we've seen plenty of reasonably deep pullbacks where it has pulled back below the 200-day moving average. Now, we can then also think about the 1,000-day moving average. And I should put that up on a weekly basis to get the 1,000-day moving average. So for the S&P 500, the 1,000-day moving average is around 3,300, which is the peak from back in 2020. And to get there, it would be a pullback in the order of approximately 30%. And I think that that's about as worst a case scenario as is possible. But in order to get there, it would at least need to pull back below the 200-day moving average, and we haven't even come close to that yet. We're still right in the region of the peak and the moving average. It would have to pull back and then encounter resistance there. And we haven't seen that yet. And there is certainly room for the Federal Reserve to reverse course well before we get a 30% pullback. So this is a rather taut environment. And obviously, we're seeing deterioration coming through in some of these major indices. And there have been questions about liquidity, because at the beginning of this year and late last year, we could have thought about more liquidity coming from the US government, but that failed to pass. We could have thought about the Federal Reserve being more generous in terms of their liquidity, and that hasn't come to pass either. The one thing that is now finally evolving is China. And they are starting to talk about providing additional liquidity. When we think about commodities, well, oil prices are rather stretched at $90. And crude oil put in a downside Q reversal in here today. Now, it's not in an especially dynamic manner, but it is pulling back from the psychological $90 level. And when we look at this on a weekly chart, well, we can see that it has a history of pulling back into the underlying range. And if that's the case, well, then we might easily see oil prices come back into that $75 area and test the region of the trend mean. And of course, if stock markets are weak, well, then it would be normal to anticipate that anything relating to economic activity might also be weaker. But oil appears to be more sensitive than copper. And a good part of the reason for that is because investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the green revolution, and that its copper is likely to be the commodity that leads us up and out of this pandemic phase, because of the insistence of governments to transition to a carbon-free or a reduced carbon-intensive economic environment. And we also continue to see that a number of commodities are still doing reasonably well. So Arabica coffee continues to consolidate here, and we continue to have a sequence of ranges, one above another, and as long as that remains the case, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The other end of the scale, you have lumber, which was limit down yesterday and was limit down again in here today. So there's the possibility here that we've seen another lower peak here, and that we're going to be in this volatile trading environment for the foreseeable future. And I'm thinking about long-term commodity ranges, because lumber prices went sideways for decades and then broke out, and we are in a new supply inelasticity environment. And it's likely that the lows are in, and that prices are unlikely to come back below 400 anytime soon. And there are plenty of other commodities. And of course, European gas prices were another example, that they had been ranging and in what felt like a volatile environment for a prolonged period, and then broke out and set record prices that nobody ever thought possible. And there are plenty of commodities that have been going sideways for what must feel like forever, and they've never broken up out of these long-term ranges. So if we're in a new commodity-led bull market, and some of the climate effects that have shown volatility start to become more permanent sources of volatility, then it's going to act as a catalyst for significant pops on the upside. And this is quite similar to the environment that we had in the early 2000s, that we were seeing relative strength coming through in defensive sectors like consumer staples. And we started to see a recovery in mining sectors, which were highly cyclical. And commodity prices were doing better, and technology was exhibiting relative weakness. And that was the linchpin for the transition, was the dollar. So the renminbi remains quite firm, and the dollar is also quite steady. And it's still gaining some attraction because people are raising cash. As bond yields rise and equities pull back, then the 60-40 portfolio is not doing especially well. So then people are raising cash, and that's what's helping to support the dollar. Ultimately, the dollar will start to deteriorate if US dollar denominated assets don't pick up quickly. And that will reignite interest in emerging markets. We've seen relative strength coming through in a large number of emerging markets, and the Asia dollar index is right at the upper side of its range, and it has this little rounding characteristic over the course of the last 6 months. There's the potential that it can break higher, and that will bolster, or I guess burnish, the attraction of Asian assets. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.